Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, it is about 9 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater program 167 in the series. This is April Fool's Day. I don't have any, Mike, I don't have any April Fools to play on our listeners tonight.
Not at all, huh?
None whatsoever, other than the fact that Lisa is in Ohio. She's not with us tonight. So is that an April Fool's joke? No, it's not, because she really is.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, maybe she was going to be in Florida, and then
and then she went to Ohio. Yes. She's out there. She does send her best. She will be here tomorrow night, and taking her place, pitch hitting, as they say in the biz. We have Mike Estella, our executive producer. He is on the A list. And he's here on a Saturday, so it's good to have you as my co-host tonight, Mike.
Thank you.
And we have Shantae Garth in the booth. She's our producer. She's the best in the biz. We love her. And tonight, we have three great classic radio shows for you. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Then it's Box 13, starring Alan Ladd. And then Crime Classics, starring Lou Merrill. So a comedy, a detective drama, and then a mystery horror episode. That's all coming your way tonight here on the WGN Radio Theater Program 167. We also have a very special announcement to make. I'll tell you about that in just a few minutes. Don't miss this special announcement. All of this is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming romantic comedy How to Talk to Girls at Parties about an alien who meets two young inhabitants at the most dangerous place in the universe.
So a sci-fi comedy type of movie, huh?
I guess so.
All right. And what do they win, Mike?
They're going to win a pair of tickets to see legendary The Apollo Chorus in their anticipated spring concert, American Masters, featuring the work of Emmy-winning music composer Jeff Beal.
Okay, the number to call, 312-981-7200. A couple of great tickets to the Apollo Theater. Now, here's a hint. This is Dakota's younger sister, and she played Aurora from Maleficent.
No! Don't touch me. You're the evil that's in the world.
All right, who is that young actress? Give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that clip one more time.
No. Don't touch me. You're the evil that's in the world.
And we have Dan on the line. Hi, Dan.
Hello.
Who is that actress?
That'd be Fanny.
You are correct. You won a pair of tickets to see legendary The Apollo Chorus in their anticipated spring concert, American Masters. See the season finale performances at 4th Presbyterian Church in Chicago on Friday, May 5th and Sunday, May 7th. Get tickets and information at apollochorus.org. Congratulations. Thanks for listening.
Dan. Yeah, appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
All right, buddy.
I'm sure I'll enjoy it.
All right, man. Enjoy that. Thanks a lot. And before we tune in to our Miss Brooks, I thought we would make this special announcement.
Yes, this is exciting.
Yeah. Number one, we have a sign.
We do.
We have a sign for the window now, the WGN Radio Theater. We've gone 2 years without a sign.
Almost 2 years.
But yeah, almost 2 years. But we have a sign, and it's awesome. I'm going to take pictures of it. But if you walk by the studio here at 435 North Michigan Avenue, you'll see that we have a sign. But that's not the really big announcement, Mike.
Not at all.
The big announcement is that on April 23rd, folks, mark your calendar for this. April 23rd, it's a Sunday, from 6 to 9 p.m., Lisa and I and Mike and Shantae, we will be at Spin. Spin, which is owned by Susan Sarandon. It's a ping pong bar and restaurant and lounge. It's awesome. It's awesome. It's right here. It's like a block away from
WGN. Yeah, it's 344 North State, actually.
344 North State Street. I'm going to write that down. 344 North State Street. Okay, Lisa and I and Mike and Shante will be there to meet and greet you. Hopefully you will come because there's going to be light appetizers free, and we're going to take pictures. We have headshots. We'll autograph headshots. We'll give them out, and we'll answer questions, and we'll just get to meet our listeners because we're celebrating our 2 years on the air here on WGN. We'd love to meet our listeners, so please come out to it between 6 to 9 p.m. And also, I will play ping pong.
I was going to ask if you were going to play.
Yeah, I'll challenge some of our listeners to ping pong. I'm hoping to get Bill Left out for it because, you know, he's supposed to be some great ping pong player. Bill,
I've seen you play and I've played you. I'm going to give it to you. You're good.
Really? You
for
think
sure.
so? You
yes.
think I, do you think I could beat Bill?
I've never seen him play. I can't make that judgment.
We'll see, but I will play ping pong with some of the listeners. So please come out. It's our WGN Radio Theater Ping Pong Meet and Greet at Spin Chicago, 344 North State Street. It'll be this April 23rd. That's a Sunday from 6 to 9 p.m. There will be some light hors d'oeuvres free of charge, and we'd love to meet you. Lisa and I and Mike and Shante will be there. All right. It's time now for Our Miss Brooks, a great situation comedy series. It's heard on CBS Radio, came to radio in 1948. And Eve Arden starred as ninth grade English teacher Connie Brooks at Madison High School. Terrific, terrific series. Let's go back to April 3rd. This is actually an April Fool's episode, Mike, because the party they go to has a little bit to do with April Fool's. So not bad, right?
Not at all.
We scheduled something at least for April Fool's. Eve Arden stars. Here's part one now of Our Miss Brooks.
Palmolive soap, your beauty hope, and Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair bring you Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Our Miss Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High School, has always tried to get along with her fellow faculty members, regardless of whether they're male or female.
One thing that school teachers of either sex have in common is the fact that he, she, or them was, is, and are underpaid. But there is one definite advantage held by the men. When a male schoolteacher hasn't enough money to go to the movies, he can stay home and look at the pictures on his Esquire calendar. I've overcome that advantage to some slight extent by making my own calendar. I've used 12 snapshots, one for each month, of Madison's bashful biologist, Philip Boynton. There they are, right on my bedroom wall. January, Mr. Boynton in his up-to-the-minute raccoon coat. February, Mr. Boynton on Valentine's Day with a big red heart-shaped box under his arm containing flies for his frog, McDougal. Then March, Mr. Boynton in plus fours, a striped blazer, and a three-propeller beanie. Last Friday morning when I tore the page for March off my calendar, there was Mr. Boynton with his arms around me. So I knew it was April Fool's Day. My landlady, Mrs. Davis, knocked on my door a moment later. Come in.
Good morning, Connie. Many happy returns of the day.
Thanks, Mrs. Davis. Happy April Fool's Day to you. Oh, what time is it anyway? I'm still sleepy.
It's almost 7, Connie. I've been up for hours planning little tricks to play on people.
Well, I hope you're not going to be as naughty as you were last year, setting firecrackers off in our yard to make everybody think it was 4th of July.
Well, that was fun, wasn't it?
Yes, until one of your pinwheels joined me in the shower.
Well, let's see now. I came up here to tell you something rather important. Oh, dear me. Whenever I talk to my sister Angela, I become almost as absent-minded as she is. We had quite a conversation on the phone this morning.
How is Angela?
Fine, thank you. But she's so flighty. Why, right in the middle of our telephone conversation, she forgot that she was talking about completely. I'm worried about her. It's like I was telling my brother the other day, we've got to do something, I said.
You've got to do something?
About what?
I was just repeating what you said to your brother.
Which brother?
I don't know. Your brother Victor, I guess.
I guess so. Well, it's... It's a beautiful day, isn't it?
Mrs. Davis, you came in here to tell me something. Now, try and remember what it was so I can take a shower and get dressed and forget about it.
Oh, yes. One of your students is waiting for you in the living room, Walter Denton.
Walter Denton? What's he doing here so early?
All right, Connie, I'll tell him. Poor thing. She's got so much on her mind, she can't concentrate.
Hi, Mrs. Davis.
Walter, what are you doing here?
You just left me here, Mrs. Davis. Oh, and you went in to see Miss Brooks.
That reminds me. What are you doing here so early?
Well, it's a big secret, Mrs. Davis, but I'll tell you if you promise to keep it strictly confidential.
I promise.
You won't forget now.
I won't forget what now?
To keep it confidential.
To keep what confidential?
I guess it's safe with you. Look at this newspaper column. The one called Dorothy Daly's Daily Advice to the Heart Sore.
Oh, I read that all the time.
You never read a letter like this one, though, I'll bet. Listen, dear Dorothy Daly, I teach English in high school, but my chief interest lies in a fellow teacher of the opposite sex whose initials are PB. No matter how I try, I can't seem to make any progress with him. I'm attractive without being ravishing, intelligent without being stuffy, cheerful without being a Pollyanna, but mostly I'm without PB. Can you help me? Signed, CB.
Well, I certainly sympathize with that young lady, but... Now, wait a minute. Connie Brooks. Walter, do you think the CB in this letter could be the CB I think the CB could be?
I'm positive it is. Look who she's stuck on. PB, Philip Boynton.
Oh, but Walter, PB could stand for anybody. Why, it could stand for Paul Bunyan.
Mrs. Davis, you're closer to Miss Brooks than any of us. Does she know anybody named Paul Bunyan?
No, not that I know of.
Then there you are. She's got to be CB.
But, Walter, do you honestly think Miss Brooks would write a letter like this to a public newspaper?
Oh, sure. Mrs. Davis, haven't you heard the famous epigram, "Love in its desperation turns to many strange devices"?
No, Walter. Who said that?
I did. Look, Mrs. Davis, we won't embarrass Miss Brooks by mentioning it in front of her, but we've got to try and help her. Listen to Dorothy Daly's answer to Miss Brooks. Dear CB, come out of your shell, improve your personality, and don't be afraid to be the life of the party. Then watch your Mr. PB sit up and take notice. Yours for nailing them down before they can wriggle off the hook, Dorothy Daly. There's our problem, Mrs. Davis. We've got to give Miss Brooks a personality.
I never noticed that she didn't have any.
Now remember, Mrs. Davis, not a word to a soul. Of course, I've told Harriet Conklin so she can tell her father he has to give a party tonight which Miss Brooks can go to and be the life of.
Tonight? That's pretty short notice, isn't it?
That's why we have to wake her up so early. This new personality's a rush job. Oh, careful, here she comes. Hiya, CB, how's everything? Okay?
Well, no, WD, it's NG.
NG.
I didn't get enough SLEEP.
What?
Sorry, SLEAP.
Oh, sleep.
If you'll excuse me, I'll get some breakfast for us. I'll call you when it's ready.
All right, Mrs. Davis. Now then, Walter, what's the crisis?
Crisis? Oh, there's no crisis. I just thought it would be nice to have a little chat.
In the middle of the night? Now, look, Walter, this April Fool's business leaves me pretty cold. So if you're playing any pranks...
Oh, this has nothing to do with April Fool, Miss Brooks. It's just that I've been making a study of personalities lately, and I've come to the conclusion that we should all come out of our shell.
Good, but let's not come out until 8 o'clock in the morning.
Now, there's nothing like parlor magic to make anybody the life of the party. For instance, have you seen the disappearing quarter trick? Look, I hold this quarter between my thumb and third finger like this. Then I make a few magic passes, and presto! Where's the quarter?
On the floor.
Well, I haven't practiced enough yet, but a trick like this you could learn easy.
I could learn it easily.
I knew you'd go for it. Now here, take the quarter in your left hand.
Look, Walter, making money disappear is no trick for a school teacher. Let's get some way to make some appear, then we'll have something.
Breakfast is ready.
Oh, come on into the dinette, Walter.
Just sit right down. You sit here, Walter.
Thanks, Mrs. Davis.
Drink your juice first, and I'll bring the rest out in a minute.
All right, Mrs. Davis. That's funny. This is orange juice.
What's funny about that?
The last breakfast Mrs. Davis prepared for me began with marinated olive juice.
She does cook up some odd recipes, all right. Oh, say, I just thought of another great party trick. It's called the spoon in the empty glass trick. Here, I've got two spoons right here. Now, I place the back of one behind the front of the other, and by means of leverage, plop it right into the empty glass. So. Wasn't empty.
It is now. Of course, my lap isn't as empty as it was.
Don't let it upset you, Miss Brooks. One of the truest things ever said is the quotation, "A damp garment should not dampen the spirits of the wearer."
Who said that?
I did.
Here we are. Now, Connie, I want to surprise you. Close your eyes before I put this food down in front of you. Go ahead now. Please close them tight.
All right, Mrs. Davis, they're closed.
There. Now, before you open them, guess what we've got for breakfast.
Salmon patties fried in Cointreau?
No, I ran out of Cointreau. Try again.
Wheat cakes and ravioli?
No, dear. I guess you better give up. Open your eyes.
Why, what's this? Plain scrambled eggs, toast and coffee?
That's right, Connie. April Fool!
Walter Danton's moving full speed ahead in his efforts to aid CB take Dorothy Daly's advice concerning PB. Let's look in now on another of the conspirators, Harriet Conklin, as she speaks to her father in the principal's office.
So all you have to do, Daddy, is to invite this party to the party when she comes by this morning.
But I don't see any reason for it, Harriet. I'm getting sick and tired of this constant round of parties. One mad whirl after another.
Daddy, the last party you gave was on Thanksgiving. Oh, this is vital, Daddy. I can't go into embarrassing details, but we've got to bring somebody out of herself. Oh, you've just got to invite Miss Brooks to our party.
Miss Brooks? But she has a party every day, all day long.
It only seems that way because of her pleasant exterior. Believe me, there are days when her heart is sorely beset beneath that gay surface and lies in her bosom like a dead thing. That must be Miss Brooks now.
Well, I won't go through with it, Harriet. I absolutely refuse
Listen,
to have any...
Listen, Daddy. You promised Mother you'd go on a diet, didn't you?
Yes, but what has that got to
if
do with...
If you don't invite Miss Brooks to our party tonight, I'll take that bar of fudge out from under your desk blotter and show it to Mother.
Come in, my dear.
I was told that you wanted to see me, Mr. Conklin. Oh, hello, Harriet.
Hi, Miss Brooks. Daddy has something he wants to tell you.
Yes. I've been coerced into having a little party at our place tonight, Miss Brooks. And if you have nothing else to do, we'd like you to come.
Well, thanks, Mr. Conklin. I'd love
to. Of course, if you can't come, we may just drop the whole thing.
Daddy, I think I'll change the blotter on your desk right now.
No. That is, I'm sure it'll be nice to get together.
All right, Mr. Conklin. Then if that'll be all, I'll see you tonight.
I'll be looking forward to it. Dismissed.
I'll walk out with you, Miss Brooks. Thanks, Daddy. And next time, try the ones with the nuts in them.
Quiet, girl.
You know, Miss Brooks, there's nothing like a party to bring a person out of her shell.
You too, Harriet? I'm beginning to like it in here.
Now, the next thing you have to do, Miss Brooks, is to meet us in the music appreciation room as soon as lunch period gets here.
The music appreciation room?
You know the old saying, music hath charms to soothe the savage breast.
Yes, but I've been dating very few savages lately. Look, Harriet, what in the world is this
all... I've got to get to my French class now, but I'll see you at lunchtime. And remember, if you want PB to eat out of your hand, you've got to cooperate, CB.
S.O.S.
All right, we'll get back to more Our Miss Brooks, but first these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Well, yes, I'm Carl Amari, but Mike Estella is pinch hitting for Lisa Wolf tonight. But Lisa will be back tomorrow. She's in Ohio, right, with her daughter?
I think so.
Some kind of a mommy-daughter thing?
Yeah, some sorority thing, perhaps?
Yeah, something like that. All right, Lisa, if you're listening, hope you're having a good time out in Ohio. We miss you. Let's see. There was something I wanted to... Oh, text line. We have a text line, and Mike is handling the text line tonight.
Yeah, I'm keeping an eye on it. It's 312-981-7200.
Right, if you have any questions for us here, the WGN Radio Theater team, give us a text, 312-981-7200. But right now, let's get back to our Miss Brooks.
Hey, Miss Brooks, mind if I walk down the hall with you?
Not at all, Walter. I'm just going to the music appreciation room to meet Harriet. Don't ask me why.
I know why, Miss Brooks. Because tonight's party is an everybody who comes must do something party. And we've got something swell doped out for you to do.
For me to do?
You'll find out about it in a minute. Hey, here's the music room, Miss Brooks. Let's go in.
That'll be all for today.
Well, he came a long way to practice.
Very clever. Very clever. I'm sure he'll make a fine musician if he concentrates on his violin and stops telling jokes.
Hello, Miss Brooks. Well, we're all set.
We are.
Did you bring it, Mr. Pringle?
Got it right in this case, Walter.
Good. You know, Miss Brooks, tonight's an everybody who comes must do something party.
Yes, I know, and I think I know what I'm going to do, too.
What?
Stay home.
Oh, don't be ridiculous, Miss Brooks. You know how well Miss Enright plays the piano, don't you?
What has Miss Enright's playing the piano got to do with me?
Well, plenty. She's coming to the party tonight, and you know how she likes to show off in front of Mr. Boynton.
But we're going to see to it that you're the life of the party. Well, come on, Harriet. We've got some more arrangements to make.
Okay, Walter. You just put yourself in Mr. Pringle's hands completely, Miss Brooks.
That's right. If you put yourself in Mr. Pringle's hands now, who knows? You may wind up in Mr. Boynton's arms later. And I'll see you tonight, CB.
I don't know what this is all about, Mr. Pringle.
Take it easy, Miss Brooks. All the children want you to do is learn a very simple little specialty for the party tonight. Now, tell me, do you have any musical education at all?
Well, when I was a little girl, I played in our Girl Scout band.
Really? What instrument?
The tuba. I didn't keep at it, though. It did something to my lips.
Oh, you must have started too young. It's a difficult instrument to master.
Yes, for months after I gave it up, I couldn't drink a malted without swallowing the straw.
Well, what I've got in mind for you won't offer any difficulties, I'm sure. Now, this is a ukulele. It's the only instrument upon which a novice can pick out a simple tune in no time at all. Now, here, just place one finger on this fret. So, now, this one here. That's right. Now, play a chord. Go ahead, try it.
Well, all right, I'll try. Washington at Valley Forge, 'twas bitter cold, and up spoke George. Bo do dee o, do 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 dee o. Take my lips and do your duty. Everybody calls me cutie.
Why, Miss Brooks, that's wonderful. Let's sing some together.
All right, Mr. Pringle.
Paul Revere on his midnight ride rode through town and loudly cried, Bo, do, dee, o, do, 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 dee, o.
Shake my hand and call me Max. I've got a charge account at SAC.
His ukulele, gaily, how he strums it, bum, bum, bums it, dancing, dancing. Then he hollers,
black bottom.
Crazy words, crazy tune. You'll be driving me crazy soon with that bo do dee o do 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 dee o.
Miss Brooks.
No.
What's the meaning of this, Mr. Pringle? And what are you doing in Mr. Pringle's music room during lunch period, Miss Brooks?
I just dropped in for a melody burger. I mean, I wanted to see if I remembered something.
Leave this room at once. As for you, Mr. Pringle, aren't you supposed to be at lunch during this period?
Yes, sir. I was just going, sir.
Well, put that ridiculous-looking instrument down and get out.
Yes, sir. Come on, Miss Brooks.
Naturally.
Yeah, disgraceful. Carrying on in the middle of a school day and with a ukulele. My dog has fleas. Boom, 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 hold that tiger. Boom, 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 hold that tiger. Boom, boom, hold that tiger. Boom, boom, hold that tiger.
Well, what do you think of the party so far, Mr. Boynton?
Oh, it's very nice, Miss Brooks, but I'm a little worried. Everybody's supposed to get up and do something, aren't they?
Well, that's the idea.
Gosh, there isn't anything I could possibly do to entertain anybody.
Oh, I don't know.
Of course, I did make a speech some months ago to my biology club, but they're all men. I couldn't repeat that in front of mixed company.
Oh, why not, Mr. Boynton? What was the subject of the speech?
Well, I'd rather not mention it, Miss Brooks. It's a little racy.
Well, I'll just listen with one ear. What was it?
Well, it was called The Primitive Urge of the Sturgeon to Swim Upstream.
Funny. I always thought the sturgeon didn't need any urging. Look, Mr. Boynton, I'm as nervous as you are about getting up and doing anything, but maybe we could do something together.
Like what, Miss Brooks?
Well, I just happen to have with me tonight this ukulele.
Oh, a uke. I haven't seen one of those things since my college days.
It's really very simple to pick up. It all came back to me in a flash. See, you just put one finger here. That's right. Now, this one here, so... Now try it. Strum it, Mr. Boynton.
All right. I'll see you in my dreams. Hold you in my... Don't be bashful. Hold that pucker. You're the best since Sophie Tucker. Come from?
I don't know, but this is a brand new Boynton. Where did you go to college? On the Keith circuit?
Well, Mr. Boynton, I've been looking all over for you.
Oh, hello, Miss Enright.
And dear Miss Brooks, may I join you?
You have.
There seems to be room on this couch for three. Don't you think so?
Only if I sit in the middle. There we are.
Miss Brooks is so possessive. You don't ever want to share Mr. Boynton with anyone, do you, dear?
The property has only been optioned. It is not ready for subdivision.
Oh, excuse me, Brooks, but Mother says if anybody wants cake and coffee, it's on the table. Just help yourselves, please.
Oh, I think I'll get some. Mrs. Conklin certainly knows the way to a man's heart.
I like the overland route myself. Would you run along, Mr. Boynton?
Can I bring you ladies something?
Just yourself, dear Mr. Boynton.
Yes. How about you, Miss Brooks?
No, thanks. Not right now.
Well, I'll be right back in a minute.
Well, no doubt you've got your specialty all prepared, Miss Brooks.
Oh, it's nothing, really.
I didn't imagine it would be. I'm going to play the piano myself.
That should be lovely. It's obvious from your build that you've moved enough of them.
That's very funny. I wonder how funny you'll feel when I get up and read this letter in Dorothy Daly's column.
Letter?
Yes, I've got the clipping right here. It's signed CB, and it says, Dear Dorothy Daly, I teach English in high school, but my chief interest lies in a fellow teacher of the opposite sex whose initials are PB.
PB? Wait a minute, Philip Boynton?
Exactly. It goes on to tell how CB can't make any progress with PB at all and pleads for advice.
Oh, but Miss Enright, you don't think that... Why, I didn't write that letter.
I know you didn't. I did.
You?
A little April Fool's joke, Miss Brooks. But of course, when I read it, I won't mention that detail. And even if you do, it'll just look like a natural attempt to cover your embarrassment.
But Miss Enright, even you wouldn't... Why,
attention, folks, attention. We come now to that part of the party we've all been looking forward to so eagerly. The part where everybody must get up and do something. First, I'd like to introduce Madison's beloved English teacher, our Miss Brooks. Miss Brooks.
Enjoy your brief moment, my dear. I'm going to follow you on with this juicy little tidbit.
What do you mean, brief moment? I'm loaded with entertainment.
Come on, Miss Brooks. What are you going to do for us tonight?
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I thought I'd do a few medleys of songs on the ukulele, then a few recitations, and maybe a parlor trick or two. First, the songs. Washington at Valley Forge, 'twas bitter cold, and up spoke George. Bo, do, do, do. So much for the songs. Now I'd like to recite for
you. Just a moment, Miss Brooks. You've been on for over
an hour. Please, Miss Enright. Miss Brooks isn't finished.
Thank you, Harry. Under the spreading chestnut tree, the village smithy stands. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. As you can see, I have here in my hand an ordinary deck of playing cards. And now I'd like to show you a fascinating parlor game. Mr. Conklin, do you have a phone book I could borrow?
Why, yes, Miss Brooks. There's one right here on this table. But don't you think it's a little late to phone anyone? It's almost 12 o'clock.
Oh, I'm not going to phone anyone. Walter, get a piece of paper and a pencil, please.
Okay, Miss Brooks.
Well, I think this is the most...
Please, Miss Enright. You're interrupting Miss Brooks.
Thank you, Walter. Now, the idea of this game is to guess which name in the phone book I'm thinking of. We'll start with the A's. If you get a feeling that I've said the one I'm concentrating on, just call out. Ready? Go. Abbott, Abernathy, Ackerman, Addison. Pascoe, Payton, Penniman, Primpachek. Zimmerman. Zimmerman A, Zimmerman B. Hasn't anyone got a feeling yet? Mr. Boynton, how about... Mr. Boynton, where are you?
Mr. Boynton went home, Miss Brooks.
He went home? When?
Right after Mr. and Mrs. Conklin went to bed. He said he didn't want to disturb you, so Miss Enright drove him home.
Miss Enright drove... Well, that's the last straw. You know, of course, Walter, that it was Miss Enright who wrote that Dorothy Daly letter.
Miss Enright?
That's right, Walter. She signed my initials, but it was her letter that Dorothy Daly answered in her column.
Boy, what a dirty trick. I'm sorry you were so embarrassed, Miss Brooks.
You think I was embarrassed tonight? Just wait, Walter, till you see to me tomorrow when Dorothy Daly answers the letter I wrote her.
Now, once again, here is our Miss Brooks.
Well, I had a date with Mr. Boynton on the following day, and I couldn't wait to find out if Miss Enright had told him about the Dorothy Daly column. Sure enough, it was the first thing he mentioned when he came by to pick me up.
That letter in the paper, Miss Brooks, it certainly has me puzzled.
Puzzled, Mr. Boynton?
Yes, I know, of course, that you're C.B., but who in the world is P.B.?
Well, Mr. Boynton, I thought sure you'd guess. P.B. is an old flame of mine. Fella named Paul Bunyan.
Next week, tune into another Our Miss Brooks show brought to you by Palmolive Soap, Your Beauty Hope, and Luster Cream Shampoo for soft, glamorous, caressable hair. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, written and directed by Al Lewis, with music by Wilbur Hatch. For mystery liberally sprinkled with laughs, listen to Mr. and Mrs. North, the exciting, fun-packed adventures of an amateur detective and his beautiful wife. Tune in Tuesday evenings over most of these same stations. And be with us again next week at the same time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. Cancer causes a death every 3 minutes, and unless the present cancer death rate is reduced, 18 million living Americans will die from it. This will affect, on the average, one out of every two families in the United States. You can help stop the further spread of cancer by helping the American Cancer Society to provide more surgery, X-ray, and radium treatments. So give generously to the American Cancer Society today. Stay tuned now for Life with Luigi, which follows over most of these same stations. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's a comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks from April 3rd, 1949, starring Eve Arden. Also in the cast, Richard Crenna, who played Colonel Troutman in the Rambo movies as Walter Denton there. You remember Colonel Troutman, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And I interviewed Richard Crenna. We should play that interview sometime here on WGN.
Yeah, I remember hearing that.
He was a great interview. Vern Smith doing the announcing, Gail Gordon, Gloria McMillan, Jeff Chandler. And that was a terrific episode of Our Miss Brooks. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a break for some commercials. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right. It is almost midnight. In our next hour, we're going to tune in to Box 13. Alan Ladd, who was a very popular movie star, appeared in his only regular radio series. It was called Box 13, where he played a mystery novelist turned, well, actually he was a newspaper man turned mystery novelist, and he got his ideas for stories by running an ad at Box 13. Adventure Wanted, We'll Do Anything, you know, call Box 13 or whatever. Great series. It was, he actually produced it. He starred in it. He wrote many of the scripts and even directed a lot of them. So it was really, it was an Alan Ladd production, I'll tell you that. And it's a good series. You're going to really like that. Then a little later, Elliot Lewis produced a mystery drama series. Elliot Lewis played Frankie Remley on the Phil Harrison Ellis Fay Show. He was a great comedian, but he was a terrific director. And he directed Suspense for a while. And he directed a series, created a series and directed it called Crime Classics, which were true crime stories from way in the past. You know, they would do Lizzie Borden, and they did all kinds of great crime stories. And so that's coming your way in our third hour. That's in the 1 to 2 o'clock hour. So a lot more classic radio coming your way. And Lisa and I and Mike and Shante, we're here every Saturday and Sunday night from 11 p.m. until 2 o'clock in the morning. And Mike Estella, our executive producer, is pinch-hitting for Lisa Wolf tonight. And it's good to have you here, Mike.
Thank you. I'm no Lisa Wolf, but, you know, you got to have somebody to talk to.
But if it wasn't for Mike, these shows that you're listening to would not sound as good as they do. I don't know what you do, Mike, the magic wand that you have that you wave over these radio shows, because the quality, it almost sounds like high fidelity when we play these radio shows, and I appreciate that.
Thank you. Yeah, some of them actually, some of the ones you give me are at times pretty poor quality, and I have to spend a lot of time on some of them.
Well,
some of them are pretty good,
yeah.
But most of them are pretty manageable.
Well, you know, these are original 16-inch transcription discs,
right.
Are the master recordings. And sometimes those discs are in poor condition. So when you do a lab transfer, the quality is just not that great. But you do something to them, make them sound great, get rid of the clicks and pops, and bring up the fidelity, and you equalize them and do all kinds of crazy
stuff. I do all kinds of crazy
stuff,
things,
you
them.
Know. Well, you do a great job. We thank you very, very much.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thank you, David Jennings. It is 12 minutes. Oh, no, it's 7 minutes after 12. So happy Sunday, Mike.
Yeah,
and happy Sunday
you.
To all of our listeners. Thanks for staying up late with us. We will be here till 2 o'clock in the morning playing all your favorite classic radio shows. Something you'd like us to play? Well, our text line is 312-981-7200. We schedule the shows a couple months in advance because Mike has to digitally remaster them all. But if there is something you'd like to hear, The Shadow or Jack Benny or Duffy's Tavern, Boston Blackie, Philip Marlowe, maybe you have a favorite that you remember as a kid, or maybe you remember your parents talking about that show, just let us know and we'll play it because we have a lot of shows.
We do. We have a ton. And you can also go on to Facebook, WGM Radio Theater.
That's right.
Let us know there.
Yeah, let us know. And if you want to know what we're playing, you can go to our website, which is WGNRadioTheater.com, WGNRadioTheater.com, and our whole schedule is posted there. And on our Facebook page, do we have our pictures up?
I'm working on it.
Oh, you're working on it.
I haven't gotten a chance to get myself together to do it.
So the Eve Arden picture isn't up yet?
Not yet, but right. It will be there soon.
There will be an Eve Arden picture, there will be an Alan Ladd picture, and then there will be a Lou Merrill picture for the Crime Classics episodes. Okay. In this hour, we're going to tune into Box 13, Alan Ladd in his only regular radio series. It's a terrific show. I promise you'll like it. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming drama Ingrid Goes West about a mentally disturbed young woman who becomes obsessed with a social media star.
Mm, okay, the number to call, 312-981-7200. What do they win, Mike?
They're going to get a pair of tickets to see the legendary The Apollo Chorus in their anticipated spring concert, American Masters, featuring the work of Emmy-winning music composer Jeff Beal.
All right, here's a hint. This is the younger sister of the Olsen twins, and she plays Wanda Maximoff in Captain America: Civil War.
Vision, that's enough. Let him go. I'm leaving.
All right. Who is that actress? 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words.
We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that clip one more time.
Vision, that's enough. Let him go. I'm leaving.
So we had John on the line from Lyle, and he ended up getting dropped, I guess, and he guessed that it was Elizabeth Olsen.
Mm-hmm, the younger sister of the Olsen twins.
So he's got a pair of tickets to see legendary The Apollo Chorus in their anticipated spring concert, American Masters, featuring the work of Emmy-winning music composer Jeff Beal. See the season finale performances at 4th Presbyterian Church in Chicago on Friday, May 5th, and Sunday, May 7th. Get tickets and info at apollochorus.org.
All right, very good. It is time now for Box 13, Good Mystery Adventure Series. It starred movie star Alan Ladd. He played Dan Halliday, a retired newspaper man turned fiction writer. And to gain ideas for his books, Mike, he ran an ad in the Star-Times newspaper that said, "Adventure wanted. We'll go anywhere, do anything. Box 13. And then people wrote, and, you know, I need this guy, I need this, I need help with this person, someone's trying to kill me, my son was kidnapped, you know, this kind of stuff. And then he would help them out, and he wouldn't charge them because it gained him ideas for his novels, right?
Right.
That was the whole premise of the show. He had a secretary named Susie, played by Sylvia Picker, and it was produced by Alan Ladd's company called Mayfair Productions. They also produced the Damon Runyon Theater. And Ladd starred, produced, even wrote some of the scripts, and it was a terrific series. You're going to listen to it right now. This is called The Haunted Artist. The original broadcast date was December 12, 1948. Here's part one of Alan Ladd on Box 13.
Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Halliday.
Box 13, care of Star Times. I don't know whether going after a ghost is your idea of an adventure, but I think I may have one for you. I don't believe in ghosts either. At least, I don't think I do. However, if you're interested, my name is Michael Davis. I'm an artist, and my studio is at 183 Lincoln Mews. I'm there almost all day.
Is it 183 Lincoln Mews? I'm there almost all day and any day. So if you'll drop around, this may be interesting. Michael Davis. So Mr. Michael Davis didn't believe in ghosts. Well, neither did I, until I met Mr. Davis.
Ghosts? Gee, Mr. Halliday, are there such things?
Ever see a bank account after March the 15th?
Huh?
Skip it, Susie. Michael Davis.
He says he's an artist.
Do you know anything about art, Susie?
Well, I've been to the museum where they have that statue of the Venus B. DeMille.
That's Venus de Milo.
The one without arms?
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Well, art is long and time is fleeting, and the same goes for Dan Halliday. And it looks like a trip to Mr. Michael Davis is in order. See you later, Susie. A half hour later, Michael Davis and I were introducing ourselves and shaking hands. I liked him, and he looked like an artist, except when he grinned. Then he looked and seemed a lot younger than his old 33 or 4. And he grinned as he said,
"So you advertise for adventure just to get plots for your stories, huh?"
"Yes, that's a general idea. Maybe I'll be able to use yours."
"Well, this sounds insane, but I think this studio is haunted. Or I am."
"Why? Do you hear the patter of cold little feet and the clank of chains at night?"
"I wish I did instead of... Oh, come and look. You see that easel in the corner?"
"Mm-hmm."
"There's a painting on it. I've got it covered now, but..."
"But what?"
"Well, Look. Take a good, long look.
I did. What I saw was one of those surrealist things. It was a desert with queer figures raising their arms to a brassy sky and a vicious-looking sun. And somehow it gave me the shivers. I was staring at it when...
Well, Holiday, what do you think of it?
What am I supposed to think of it?
Meaning you don't like it?
Well, I don't know.
I hadn't intended you to criticize it. Just look at it and see if you notice anything wrong. Go ahead, I'll keep quiet.
I looked again, and something did strike me as being a little odd. I moved in for a closer look, stood there for a moment.
Uh-huh. You've got it, Holiday. That stone quarry painted in the right-hand portion of the canvas.
Yes, it doesn't belong. I mean, it's out of place.
I didn't paint it.
Maybe we'd better go over the signals again, Davis. I lost the ball on that play.
I don't blame you. But it's the truth. I did not paint that quarry in there. Look at it. The technique is different.
Yes, the brushwork's not like the rest.
Exactly. And that painting has to be done in 3 days. I've been working on it for 7 months, and it has to be finished.
Why, what's the rush?
Well, I've been invited to hang a canvas in the Bernier Galleries.
Oh, which means you've arrived. Bernier's being taught what the big leagues is to baseball.
Exactly. You see, Holiday, I started the painting 7 months ago. Everything was fine for a time. And this time...
What Davis told me was this. He'd finish work in the evening, cover the painting, and turn in. Then, in the morning, when he'd take the cover off the canvas, the quarry would be painted in. It happened 6 times. The last time was the night before he wrote his letter to Box 13. He was sure no one had entered his studio during the night. He'd locked his windows and doors, but still it happened.
It's driving me crazy. I've lain awake at night trying to catch the person responsible, but nothing doing. He never shows up when I'm waiting for him.
Have you told the police?
Oh, sure. They thought I was just 2 steps ahead of the man in the white coat.
Huh. You're sure you've locked up every night?
Look at the door. New locks, 2 of them. Even the window fasteners are brand new.
Those are the only entrances?
And exits. No, Holiday. No one comes in through the doors or windows. I'll swear to it.
But someone has to, Davis.
Unless I am leaving the rails.
No, I don't think so.
Thanks. Even my... best friends won't tell me that.
Well,
Michael, darling, I brought dinner. Oh.
Come on in, Betty.
Here, Mike. Here, take some of these packages.
Yeah. Betty, this is Dan Holiday. Dan, this is my fiancée, Betty Harper.
Hello, Dan. And my name is Betty.
Well, thanks. I'll use it.
Mike, darling, I've invited Kit and Ann for dinner. Is that all right?
Sure. Will you stay, Dan?
Oh, I'm afraid I can't. Besides, I'm unexpected.
Oh, no, we've got plenty. Spaghetti, salad, wine. Oh, be careful of that bottle, Mike. Here, let me have it. The bag's bursting. Oh,
please, I'm not a child.
That's a matter of opinion. You will stay, won't you, Dan?
Well,
Oh, please do. We can talk some more about my problem.
Problem? Your problem, Mike?
Oh, yes. Dan's going to help about the painting. And I'm a child, huh? There goes the wine.
That was clumsy, wasn't it?
Accidents will happen, Betty. If I can put in that bromide.
Oh, Mike, I just remembered. We're to go to the Suttons after dinner.
Huh? Oh, that wasn't a promise.
We can't refuse them again.
But Dan's gonna...
As a matter of fact, I can't stay anyway. I have an engagement, too.
Well, all right, but you will return tomorrow, won't you?
Sure, I'll be glad to. Good night. Well, well, I like this. It looked good. Especially when Mike's own girlfriend was anxious to deal me out. That Betty didn't want me on the team. As easy to see as the brass button in a collection plate. She didn't drop that bottle of wine. It jumped out of her hands when Mike said I was going to help. Why? Well, I'll have to find that out. I got to my apartment after dinner and sat down to think about it when... Hello?
Is this Dan Holiday?
Yes, it is. Who's this?
Well, never mind. Just a moment.
Hello? Hello?
Holiday, you're to keep away from Michael Davis. Forget the whole thing, understand?
Well, frankly, no. Am I supposed to?
Well, yes. I mean, look here, Holiday. It'll be awkward for you if you continue.
Go on, I'm interested.
All right, just remember what I said. Keep away from Michael Davis or you'll be sorry. Now, listen, this is no joke.
But I'm laughing.
I warn you. Good night.
Brother, whoever you were, that was the worst imitation of a squeeze play I ever heard.
Are you kidding, Dan?
No, someone called me last night, wanted me to keep away from you.
Why, it must have been a joke.
Does anyone want to keep this painting out of the burner galleries for some reason?
I thought of that. You mean sabotage, sort of?
Yeah, that's it. Well, who?
No one I know.
You're sure, Mike?
Of course.
Have you done any work on the canvas today?
Yes, I scraped off the stone quarry and started my own work again.
Then I've got an idea. What time is it?
4 o'clock. Why?
Got any sealing wax?
Sealing wax? No, I haven't.
Well, can you get some?
Well, yes, there's a store a block down the street, but what do you want with sealing wax?
Well, for one thing, we're going to prove there's no ghost. Or
what?
Or that there is one. Run down and get the wax.
All right, you're the boss. Make stuff at home. I'll be back in a few minutes.
I worked fast to get the thing done before Mike came back. I took every tube of paint, every brush, every palette I could see and wiped them clean. Then I put them back where they had been, just in time. Mike came back, handing me the sealing wax.
Well, will this be enough, Dan?
Oh, yes, I think so. Okay. Now we'll lock all the windows. And be sure they're locked.
What are you up to?
You see, we can find out if someone gets in here while you're asleep. We'll seal the locks and bolts with this wax and...
Yes, but wax can be broken.
If it is. We'll know someone came in the windows of the door.
Yeah, but the person could reseal the locks. Sealing wax melts easily enough.
Sure, but he couldn't put the imprint of my signet ring back in the wax without getting the ring from me first. And I'm very fond of this ring. Never take it off my finger. Okay, Mike, let's go to work on the windows. All right, that does it. Both windows sealed. If our ghost gets in now, you'll have to break the wax.
You know, there's only one thing wrong.
What, Mike?
I won't be able to sleep tonight.
Oh, I'll take something. You've got to sleep because your visitor won't break in unless you do.
Dan, suppose those seals aren't broken in the morning, but the painting's been changed anyway. What then?
We both apply for an outside cell. Now, don't do anything more on your painting, and don't touch a thing.
Why not?
You want me to help you, don't you?
Certainly.
Then ask no questions and do as I say. And tomorrow morning, we may have an answer. It was 11 o'clock that night before I left Mike's studio. He had taken a sedative and was sleeping like a baby. I turned off the lights, checked the seals in the windows. All okay. I let myself out, tried the door. Locked, but good. Then I took the sealing wax and melted a hunk of it to go over the keyholes. And I pressed my signet ring against the wax. I even forced wax into the crack above the door. Initialed that. Michael Davis was sealed in. And whoever, or whatever, was doing the dirty work was sealed out. I hoped. When I got home, I set my alarm for 5 the next morning. Yeah, it went off all right. I stumbled out of my bed, into my clothes, and drove to Davis's studio. I wanted to get there before he woke up. I did, because when I listened at his door, there wasn't a sound. I looked carefully at the seals I'd put there the night before. Well, they were intact. I'll swear to it. Then I rang his buzzer. He was quite a sleeper. Well, he'd taken something and...
Who is it? Why don't you come back in a week?
It's Dan, Mike. Let me in.
Huh? Oh, sure.
Do you always get up this early?
I have a contract with the park commissioners to wake up the birds.
Fine. Shouldn't happen to a vulture.
Sleep all right?
Oh, like a top.
Disturbed at all?
Nope.
Okay. Let's look at the seals.
You bet.
Well, this one's all right. So's this one. And the seals on your door were intact, too. Now, take the cover off the painting, Mike.
What if it's been changed again?
If it has, I'll buy you a new hat.
I wear a size 7 3/8. And make it a gray one.
All right, we're listening to Box 13 from December 12, 1948. The Haunted Artist, starring Alan Ladd, the deep voice co-star of that episode is Paul Frees. Paul Frees was the voice of Boris Badenov on the Rocky and Bullwinkle cartoons.
That's right.
Yeah.
If you hop onto Facebook right now, actually, you can see a picture of Alan Ladd. I finally got that up there, and then Eve Arden as well.
Awesome. Go to go to Facebook and then search WGN Radio Theater. We'll get back to Box 13 in just a few minutes, but first these words. All right, 52 classic radio shows. How would you like that, folks? You want 52 classic radio shows, all digitally remastered, absolutely free? Now, this is not only 52 classic radio shows. It's 52 classic radio shows every year that we're giving our listeners. All of our listeners could have these. They're via digital download, and all you have to do is go to our website, which is free. Radio Classics, freeradioclassics.com. Just log on to freeradioclassics.com and put your name and your email address and hit send, and then you'll get a confirmation email that you have to click. Once you do that, you're signed up. Every single Monday, you will get an email from me, and in that email will be an embedded classic radio show that you can listen to on any listening device. You can Bluetooth it to your car while you're driving. It's a half-hour classic radio show in that email, but you'll also get a picture of whoever is in. So if you get, let's say, a Jack Benny classic radio show, there'll be a picture of Jack Benny. And if it's Gunsmoke, there'll be a picture of William Conrad and so on and so forth. There's also all kinds of information like the synopsis, the original broadcast date, who the sponsors were, who the cast is. So it's a free service. We wanted to do this. I actually think you and I and Lisa were huddled around the table one day talking about what we can do to thank our listeners for being such loyal listeners to the show.
Yeah, and then Lisa came up with this great idea.
Yeah, Lisa came up with a great idea, and and we've put it into action. Although she does help. She picks out shows and things. But it's a great website. It's absolutely free. You don't have to buy anything. Roger gets it. He loves it. Right, Roger?
Love it. 2 o'clock every Monday afternoon.
He gets it.
I even have a special alert.
Yeah.
So it pops up on my phone. Even if I have the phone turned off, I see it. It buzzes. I go, yeah. And you know where I usually am
where?
At 2 o'clock?
Huh.
I'm waiting for my grand girls to come out of school at 2:45, so I get to start listening to it right at 2 o'clock.
That is perfect. And you know what? They say that in life there's nothing free. Well, we have just thwarted that, right?
You got that right.
Because this is free. You get it free. Just go to freeradioclassics.com. You can sign up right now. And if you do, by Monday around 2 in the afternoon, you're going to get an email from me. With an embedded classic radio show. So it might be Suspense one week. It might be Jack Benny. The next week it might be The Whistler. You never know what you're going to get, but it's always good. And the quality's always great. Right, Roger?
Yo, crystal clear.
Yeah.
Like it was a fresh broadcast, brand new, and it's great. And
right.
Now
thank
we
you.
Do have to clarify this.
Yeah.
2 o'clock Central Time.
Oh yeah, Central. Yeah, you'll really like it, folks. And if for any reason you don't want to get them anymore, let's say you subscribe, you don't want to get them, you could always unsubscribe. But you will get one email every Monday from me with a different classic radio show. 52 a year, every year. FreeRadioClassics.com.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
You know, you don't look anything like Lisa Wolf, though, Mike.
Yeah, I would agree with you.
Yeah, that's actually probably a good thing. Lisa's missed. Our listeners are texting in saying, the show just is wah-wah without Lisa.
I'm doing the best I can.
You know, so. Mike, I don't know. We have to. Can you make your voice sound higher and try to make it sound like you're Lisa?
Maybe, but I'm not going to.
No, all right.
But you know what's odd? This is like Lisa has taken more time off, I think, like in the past year than her
ever.
Whole radio career.
Yeah, I know. And I think, I wonder if we should... Is there anything we should do about that?
I don't know.
What do we pay her? Minimum wage. I mean, it's pretty hard to threaten her when you're paying minimum wage.
Yeah, but she just loves us so much, so,
yeah,
you know.
Right.
It would be kind of threatening.
We love Lisa. We wish she was here. But you know what? She's with her daughter at some sorority thing in Ohio. She said she'll be back in time. She lands at about 8 o'clock tomorrow at O'Hare, and she said she'll be here on time. So we'll see.
All right.
We'll see.
Well, I'll be here, if anything.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Pinch hitting.
That's correct.
Right? All right, let's get back now to Box 13.
Now back to The Haunted Artist, another Box 13 adventure with Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
Well, the painting was changed. Davis swore he hadn't done it, and I believed him. But if he hadn't... Okay, there had to be an answer. I took all the tubes of paint, brushes, and palettes with me when I left Davis. Also, the painting itself. I wouldn't tell him why. Lieutenant Kling at police headquarters was more curious.
What are you doing, taking a home course in detective work?
Yes, I'm on my fourth lesson. It's entitled, How to Be a Nosy Cop.
What's the gag, Holliday?
Look, there's no gag. I just left a guy who's biting his nails so badly he was working on his elbow a few minutes ago. Kling, run fingerprint tests on those tubes and brushes and palettes. Then compare them with the prints on this glass, will you?
Whose glass is it?
Belongs to an artist friend of mine. I swiped it when he wasn't looking.
What have you got in that big package?
A body.
Whose?
All right, it's a painting. And you don't know anything about art.
I knew an artist model once. She wasn't as bad as she was painted. Okay, so I don't slay you.
All right, I'll laugh at your joke. Ha ha. Now, will you do me that favor?
Okay, okay. Fingerprint test in the tubes, brushes, and palette. Compare them with prints on the glass, right?
How soon can I have them?
For anybody else, in a half an hour. For you, 3 hours, okay?
Great. Be back in 3 hours. After leaving Kling, I went to the Star-Times and learned the name of an art expert. An hour later, I showed him Mike's painting.
That is quite good. Yours?
No, it's a friend of mine's.
Good brushwork. Excellent composition. Wonderful color. And what this? This has no place in the picture.
Look, I've got a lot of things to do. What I want you to do is look at the painting and tell me whatever you can about it. I'll pay you, of course.
Oh, very well. But it will take maybe 2 hours to do a good job. You understand?
Oh, yes, sure. I'll be back in 2 hours. Well, it was a merry-go-round. From Kling to the art expert, from him back to Kling.
A little less than 3 hours, Dan.
Haven't you finished?
Sure. There's your stuff and here's the report. What's the matter with you?
Kling, there's no mistake about this report, is there?
Mistake? Look, Dan, our boy knows his business. Bet on it. Anything you like.
Weren't there any other prints at all?
None. The prints on the paint tubes and the rest of that stuff were the same as on the glass. All from the same person.
But it can't be.
I've got news for you. It is.
Well, the only person who could have touched those tubes and brushes was Davis himself. Yet why should he sabotage his own painting? One that meant so much to him. And yet, he was asleep when it happened. Or was he? I stopped thinking about it then. I had to get back to the art expert and find out something. Well, it was a day of surprises because when I saw him...
Yeah, fine thing. They pushed me and they took your painting.
Ah,
who? I'm standing here looking when they come in. I have no time to see who they are when who. They pushed me. They grabbed the canvas and they're gone.
Did you call the police?
Yeah, the police come, but I can tell them nothing. Never mind.
Were they men, the ones who took the painting?
One man, one woman.
You're sure there was a woman?
Young man, I'm an art expert, but I also know other things. I know a woman when I see one, even for a second.
All right. Never mind them now. What did you find out about the painting?
Well, not much. I had not much time. But I can tell you this. I think that the right side of the picture was painted by somebody other than the one who painted the rest.
You mean that stone quarry wasn't painted by the same artist who did the rest of the picture?
No, I do not think so. There's a different technique, one that is familiar. And I think I recognize it.
You do? Well, what's his name? The one who painted the quarry.
Well, it's a peculiar technique. Some years ago, I handled some paintings by this man, and...
All right. Who is he?
Luigi Antonetti.
Oh. Where can I get in touch with him?
Well, what?
I want to see him. Where can I reach him?
Oh, you're crazy, young man. Luigi Antonetti is dead.
Oh, that was great. One more twist like that, and I need a corkscrew to take off my hat. And there was one person who could answer a few questions for me. Betty Harper. I got her address from Davis and told him to hold base until he heard from me. I guess Betty didn't expect me.
Well, Mr. Holliday, I was just getting ready to go out.
Correction, you just came in. Where's that painting?
Painting? What are you talking about?
Betty, Oh, hello.
Hello.
Kit, this is Dan Holliday. Kit Sayers, Mr. Holliday.
How are you, Holliday?
Oh, that voice.
The voice of doom over the phone.
Well, really, I...
Kit, that was a bad job.
Well,
be quiet, Kit.
Where's that painting?
Now, Mr. Holliday.
You know you've let yourself in for a vacation on the taxpayers' money with that trick?
Now, really, it was a joke, wasn't it, Betty?
Mr. Holliday, Kit really thought he was helping out in a practical joke.
Well, wasn't I?
Look, will you go?
Now, Holliday...
Oh.
All right. But I must say, it all turned out very stupidly.
Okay, Betty. So you've got the painting.
Yes. Now, will you please let me alone? Will you let Mike alone?
Not before I find out what's going on.
What if I told you his career would be ruined? His life ruined, too. Would you still go on?
Maybe I don't believe that.
But you've got to. I love Mike, and I'm trying to help him.
Help him? Look, if Mike doesn't finish that painting, it won't hang in the Berners galleries. What becomes of his career then? You're robbing him of his chance, not helping him.
Then I'll rob him of it. I'd rather do that than...
Then what?
I've said enough. Oh, please, please, you've got to believe me, Dan. All I want is for Mike to be happy.
And all I want to know is what's going on. And what does Luigi Antonetti have to do with all this?
How did you find that out?
It doesn't matter. Is Luigi Antonetti still alive?
He's dead.
And how can he paint that quarry on Mike's canvas?
Get out of here. You get out.
All right. All right, but I'll find out.
If you do and any harm comes to Mike, I swear I'll kill you. Now get out.
That was all from Betty. I would have bet my last penny she was doing what she was doing for Mike. But why? Why? Then I got an idea. Find out about Luigi Antonetti. I looked him up. Found out he'd lived in a small town about 250 miles away. He painted there. Okay, so I drove to the little town. Sure, I found out. He was dead, all right. I was even shown his grave, and when I looked at it, I wanted to reach back and chip the icicles off my spine. How could a dead man paint? There was only one answer. He couldn't. Then I learned something else. Antonetti had a pupil named Michael Davis. More questions, and finally I found an old school teacher who remembered.
Michael, of course, wonderful boy. Luigi Antonetti taught him painting. He said Michael had a brilliant career ahead of him.
I see. Well, Mr. Evans, do you know what became of Michael?
Well, I think he went to the city, although I haven't heard.
When did he go?
I believe shortly after he graduated from high school. That must be 16 years ago. Yes, it was right after his best friend was killed.
His what?
Yes, poor boy. He fell into the old quarry.
Quarry? Stone quarry?
Well, yes. It was one night after a senior party. I think, yes. Both lads, Michael and Arthur, were in love with the same girl, you see.
Would her name be Betty Harper?
Well, it's amazing you should know that, yes.
How about this Arthur?
Well, it was quite dark. Arthur, I believe, went back to get something. The bridge across the quarry must have broken. Michael was upset for days, even though Arthur was his rival for Betty.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Evans. You'll excuse me, but I've got to hurry. But I had to put more pieces together. So I went back to the city and back to the art expert.
Yeah, it's not only possible, Mr. Holliday. It's quite probable. In his early years, he would use his teacher's technique.
Next stop, the psychiatrist.
Certainly, Mr. Holliday, that's quite possible. There are numerous case histories similar to it in General Farm.
Things began to fit together. The different technique, that of a dead man, yet only Davis's fingerprints on the tubes and brushes. Betty's concern and her willingness to see his career stopped rather than have me find out the reasons for everything that happened. But I had to bring the whole thing out in the open. So later in Mike's studio...
Let me get this straight, Dan. You say I'm doing that myself, ruining my own painting?
Yes, you are, Mike.
Don't listen to him, Mike. Now, please don't.
What's the matter with all of you?
Mike, you've got to listen to me.
And he's got to listen to me and Dr. Rawlings.
Why did you bring a doctor?
I'm not only a doctor, Mr. Davis. I'm a psychiatrist.
Are you trying to tell me I'm crazy?
No, of course you're not. But you will be if you don't let us help. Now, listen, you want your career, don't you?
Certainly.
All right, you won't have it if you don't let us help.
It won't be helping. Oh, Mike, send them away, please.
Mike, do you remember a person named Arthur Denning?
Denning? No, I don't.
Now, will you let him alone?
Betty, believe me, this is better for him. Ask Dr. Rawlings.
Tell him, Doctor.
I'm sure Mr. Davis has a guilt complex.
Oh, yes.
Unless we find out why, he'll never finish this painting. Perhaps never finish any other.
Why not? What would stop me?
Your own mind, Mr. Davis.
Mike, you know as well as I that no one came into your studio the night we sealed it up. No one. You were the only person in here. Now do you see? Not quite. What do you want me to do?
Well,
Dr. Rawlings told Mike what had to be done. Davis agreed. It took only a few seconds for Rawlings to inject a drug into Davis's arm. Then we waited until...
All right, he's under. You asked the question, Mr. Holliday.
Mike, can you hear me?
Yes.
Now listen, Mike, it's 16 years ago. You're in high school. A senior. There's a senior party. It's night. Remember?
Yes. It's dark.
Who's with you, Mike?
Betty and Arthur.
What happened that night, Mike?
I killed Arthur.
Mike, no.
Be quiet. How did you kill him, Mike?
He had to go back for something. I told him to take the shortcut over the quarry.
Then what happened?
I forgot.
You forgot what?
The bridge. The bridge was broken. It was dangerous. But I forgot. I wouldn't have sent him.
Yes, I know. He was killed, wasn't he?
Yes. I loved Betty. So did he. Everyone would have said I killed him. But I didn't. I just forgot about the bridge. I didn't mean...
All right, that's all.
I thought he did it deliberately.
You see, Miss Harper, his conscious mind refused to admit his guilt, so he forgot completely. His conscious mind forgot to protect him from the terrible feeling of guilt.
But ultimately it came out. He learned painting from Luigi Antonetti 16 years ago. So it was natural at first that he used Antonetti's style, technique. Then, 16 years later, his mind goes back into the past, controls his hand, and he paints as he did 16 years ago. But he paints that quarry, the quarry which was associated in his mind with his guilt, or what he thought was his guilt.
And now? What about now?
Now, when he wakes up, we'll tell him and he'll be all right. For good.
And out of the Berner Gallery show have come several new painters of distinction. Not the least of them is Michael Davis, whose intensity of feeling and whose brilliant...
That's good enough, Susie. Well, looks like he's all right, doesn't it?
Gee, isn't the human mind wonderful?
Well, that depends on which way you look at it.
Uh-huh. I was psychoanalyzed once.
Oh? And what did you find out?
We've got a lot of mail to open, Mr. Holliday.
Oh, good night, Susie.
Next week, same time, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holliday in Box 13. Alan Ladd appears through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures. Watch for him in his latest picture, Saigon. Box 13 is directed by Richard Sandville, with an original story by Russell Hughes, and original music composed and conducted by Rudy Schrager. The part of Susie is played by Sylvia Picker. That of Lieutenant Kling by Edmund MacDonald. Production is supervised by Vern Karstensen. This is a Mayfair production from Hollywood.
Top-notch radio mystery right there. Box 13, December 12th, 1948. That's called The Haunted Artist, starring Alan Ladd along with Paul Frees in that cast and Sylvia Picker. She played scatterbrained Susie, his secretary. And Alan Ladd, great actor. He was appearing in Saigon at this time. You heard Vern Karstensen or who was the announcer? I think it was Vern Karstensen. He was Shane. Remember that movie? A good Western with Jack Palance. He played Shane. Good, very famous cowboy movie. You didn't see it?
No,
you're looking
I
at
did
me
not.
Like I'm from another planet. So maybe you didn't
I haven't.
See it. Yeah, that was a really good movie, Shane. Very famous movie. Alan Ladd. He was He used to do a lot of movies with Veronica Lake. You know why? Because Veronica Lake was about 4'11", and he wasn't a tall guy. He was like 5'5", 5'6". And so when he saw Veronica Lake, he was like, okay, she's my co-star in all my movies now.
Ah, interesting.
Because I look like a giant next to her.
Right.
Not that's pretty smart.
Yeah.
Right? All right, so hope you enjoyed Box 13. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater.
They made a remaster.
Soon. Very soon. Good question. The book comes out in November, and it's going to be available at Walmart, Costco, Sam's Club. It's going to be available online, Amazon. In fact, you can pre-order it already on Amazon.
This is not like a late April Fool's show?
No. I've been working on this, yeah. I have to have it all done by May 1st, all of the descriptions and things. And Martin Grams is my co-author on it. He's a great writer and he's a big aficionado of classic radio. So the two of us are writing. We're kind of taking, you know, he writes part of it, I write the other part, and we kind of tweak each other's. And then I will be giving you 76 classic radio shows, one for each of the – we can't do all 100 because I don't have the rights to all 100. But we have rights to 76 of the titles.
Okay.
So people will not only, and I think the book's only like $29.99. So it'd be a really great price, and it'll be available everywhere. You can pre-order it right now, even at Amazon. It's top 100 radio shows. If you type in my name and Amazon, it'll come up. So yeah, check it out.
I will.
And I'll tell you what, I'm not kidding you. This book is going to be awesome. They've sent me some of the galleys, full color with pictures, factoids about each show, and then, you know, the description, who the casts were, like starting with Abbott Costello all the way down to yours truly, Johnny Dollar, the top 100 series.
Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited about it.
Yeah,
I'm really digging. Rod, that's a perfect gift for Roger for his birthday.
Thank you. I'll wait for Christmas time to get that book from you.
Wouldn't you?
Sure, of course I would.
You know, the cheapskate that I am, I'll probably get them for, you know, about 50 off.
Can I get a special deal because I know the author?
They're $29.99. I'll probably get it for 50 off. So I'll give you a nice Christmas present, $15.
All right.
You know?
Yeah, I know a guy.
Sign it, too.
Really?
Oh, well, if I sign it, it's an extra $100.
Ah, criminy.
You know.
Hey, friends like you.
I got to make a living, Roger.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean,
I got kids to feed.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 9 minutes after 1 o'clock in the morning. Thanks for staying up late with us. This is the WGN Radio Theater. My co-host tonight is Mike Estella, pinch hitting for the vacationing Lisa Wolf. But she will be back tomorrow, she promises. She's in Ohio.
Yep.
She'll be back tomorrow, and we're looking forward to that. And then tomorrow we have the Jack Benny program, Broadway Is My Beat, and Dimension X. Good lineup. We have an episode of Crime Classics coming your way right here in just a few minutes. Good Mystery starring Lou Merrill, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming drama, The Killing of a Sacred Deer, about a teenager who attempts to bring a brilliant surgeon into his dysfunctional family.
Okay, and what do they win?
They're going to win 4 tickets to the Chicago Artesian Chocolate Show on April 22nd and 23rd at Plumbers Hall in the West Loop.
So if you're a chocolate lover, you get 4 tickets to this. All right, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor was the star of the movie Phone Booth.
Did you call me Stu? Who's Stu? I don't know any Stu.
Why do you prefer Stuart?
Look, a lot of people in this neighborhood know who I am.
All right, so who was the star of Phone Booth? Give us a call, 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after these words.
We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that clip one more time.
Did you call me Stu? Who's Stu? I don't know any Stu.
Why do you prefer Stuart?
Look, a lot of people in this neighborhood know who I am.
And we have Greg on the line. Who's that actor, Greg?
I think that's Colin Farrell.
You are absolutely correct, and you are going to win, or you are going to be receiving, 4 tickets to the Chicago Artesian Chocolate Show on April 22nd and 23rd at Plumbers Hall in the West Loop. Enjoy demonstrations and see chocolate sculptures take shape. Get tickets and details at chocolateevents.com. Or, I'm sorry, chocolateevents.net.
All right, Greg. Congrats, buddy.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Thanks for staying up with us. We appreciate you. And it's time now for Crime Classics. This is a docudrama heard on CBS from June 15th, 1953 through June 30th, 1954. So only one season. It was created, produced, and directed by Elliot Lewis. And it was true crime stories examining crimes and murders throughout history. It grew out of Lewis's personal interest in famous murderer cases. He was a real expert on all that. And he took a documentary-like approach to the subject matter, carefully sort of recreating the facts and personages and the feel of the time with the music and things. And Lou Merrill portrayed our host, Thomas Highland. The series featured radio's finest supporting players. I know you will like this. One of my favorite mystery shows.
I actually really do enjoy this.
This is a terrific show. They really put you in the period.
Right.
You know, you really feel like you are there. You know, especially the music. It's all great. And the music was all done by Bernard Herrmann, who was Alfred Hitchcock's and Orson Welles' favorite composer. He was the best, really. This is called John and Judith, Their Crime and Why They Didn't Get to Enjoy It. Here's part one of Crime Classics.
Good evening. This is Crime Classics. I am Thomas Highland with another true story of crime. Listen. That was a wind. An English wind of the winter of 1684. A shutter rattler of a wind. And it gets under doors and into houses and into rooms. And when it does this, it's known as a searching wind. It worries a door all night long and tinkles crockery hanging on hooks and searches some more. And finally, it finds what it was looking for. This particular wind just found John and Judith and made them cold and made them shiver and made them hate each other. As a matter of fact, this particular wind made them sorry they'd ever killed anybody and gotten into this situation in the first place. So, tonight, my report to you on John and Judith, Their Crime, and Why They Didn't Get to Enjoy It.
Crime Classics, a series of true crime stories from the records and newspapers of every land, from every time. Your host each week, Mr. Thomas Highland, connoisseur of crime, student of violence, and teller of murders. Now, once again, Mr. Thomas Highland.
Our scene is the country town of Snitton in the parish of Bitterley, near the confluence of the Teme and Corve River. The scene, in fact, later immortalized in Henry Luddy's singing stanzas. Indeed, it was a veritable Henry Luddy setting which concerns us here. Summer, heather, gorse, larks on the bough and on the wing, primroses, violas, and maiden fern, squirrels gathering and putting away, gophers and quail. Summerly and a smile, Luddy's very words. And in the middle of this sonnet of summer, right in the middle of it, where the sun shone the most golden, there was a house. And in this house was a kitchen, and in the kitchen was a maid, a hired help, that is. And making love to the maid was John Cupper, Mrs. Cupper's husband, that is. Mrs. Cupper being at the market at the moment.
Well, now you get to one side, do, so I can get back to that kettle.
That was Judith, the hired help.
Oh, fie the kettle. Give me a lippy-do.
And that was John Cupper, the man who hired her.
Ah, sweet one, Judy girl. And sweet it was.
One wine from me, John. The kettle needs doing, and the silver tray needs shining.
You can scour and shine another day.
And your wife will be coming home any time. Unwind from me.
Oh, she'll not be coming home for a while.
Oh, smart one, ain't you?
And how do you know that?
I gave her farthing enough to buy two melons, oh. Two large melons, oh. And walking back with them, little girl. Little Judy will take a longer time, I tell you.
Oh, smarty, smarty, smarty. No, John.
Oh, why not? I just told you that me...
I'll verse, John. Hmm? Like you do. But like you haven't done for a week now. I wants me a verse. Oh, so smart you are. We play the game, John.
All right. Judith walks in the other, light as a feather. Yeah, come closer. It's the game. Yeah. She makes a gay song as she happens along. Judith goes like, ah, Judy girl, give us a lippy-doo. Oh, Judy girl.
Oh, John. Hello. And well, now, oh, I should have knocked and called out.
Now, Goodwife Smith, I was helping the elf here
to... Nanny.
You go about your work, Judith, and if the dust in your eye it still troubles you, well, then...
Dust in the eye, Nanny.
I pray you, Goodwife Smith, mention none of this now. Now, why do you stand here, Judith, do your work? Goodwife Smith?
What business is it of mine that you make merry with your maid? I will not tell your wife. And I must leave anyhow, at once almost, as soon as I have got what I came for.
Anything.
Butter. A patling. And put it on that silver tray the wench is shining. And listen to me. I'll return only the butter.
Huh?
Do it, sir. Give it to me. Now.
Yes.
Goodwife Smith placed the silver tray in one tight little fist and went singing...
Nanny o, nanny o, nanny o day.
Right out the door. John and Judith sulked for the next half hour, after which Mrs. Cupper made her entrance.
John! John, open the door! I'm heavy with melons and cannot reach!
And good melons they were. So supper was had, and after the dishes were cleared by Judith, and the floor swept by Judith, and the pot scoured, and the hearth cleaned and scrubbed, and the linen folded and put aside...
Judith?
Yes, Goody Cupper?
You can eat your supper now. Then you can have the night off.
Yes, Goody Cupper.
And mind you, the lads from Shropshire down the road. Mind you, girl.
Yes, sir.
And later, after Judith had gone...
I like me our maid, John.
What?
Our maid, Judith. She's a good one.
If you say it, she is.
John?
Yes?
Next year will be 4 years we're married.
Yes.
And my father wagged me it would end before it was 1 year old.
I know.
Oh, my father was a wrong wagger, wasn't he?
Oh, yes.
Coming home from marketing, the good thoughts of this warm house and my love for you choked up in me, and so I knighted Judith off. I thought, John, you remember? John!
Yes?
Where is the silver tray?
What, my love?
The silver tray which Grandfather Wheeler gave to us the day before he was so untimely.
Oh.
Well, where is it?
I gave it to Silversmith to ungreen it.
Oh, good, John. Thoughtful John. John?
Yes.
Alone we are. John.
It's a warm night, Anna, and I...
Oh, and I shiver. Hold close to me.
Well...
And remember the... Warm night of heather?
Yes.
And the game you taught me to play? The verse you made and closer I would come?
Speak no more of it, I pray you.
Then what would you do tonight, John?
Well, don't vex me, woman. Suddenly I have bile inside and it bitters me. Yeah, I'll sit till it's time for bed. You do what you want.
Yes, John, yes.
And Goody Cupper lighted a candle and walked upstairs and went to her bed. She kneeled beside it and pressed her cheek against the pillow. And later, she dressed into her fresh linen nightgown and went to bed and let the warmth of the night drift over her. And she slept. Her husband, on the other hand, waited up for the hired help. He paced the living room, and when that produced no Judith, he went outside and paced the garden, which got better results.
Judith!
You!
Where you been?
Shropshire.
Ah, were those lads all about?
There's no sweet lads like you, John, and you know it.
You tipple.
And what did you think I'd do?
And where did you get the money to buy? Answer me that.
I'll tell you true. In Barbara Mercy's alehouse I was. And there I sat with folded hands and looking prim, and smoothed down my linen from time to time. And I would look up, and there would be a frothy pewter.
Some lad bought you ale.
There was three.
Three lads?
One was golden, one was dark, and one was big old.
Oh, yeah, you joke to me. Come to me.
How they fighted for me, and bloodied each other, and walked off arm in arm.
Oh, listen, there's Heather tonight, Judy.
Were you my husband?
What?
Goody Cupper owns a feather bed, and I sleep on rags and wood. And let me tell you, John, Barbara Mercy said to marry you, and she's the one who knows. Good night, John.
You're away.
What for?
I have already a wife.
And you can't get another till you're rid of her.
True.
And then rid of her.
How?
I did not ask Barbara Mercy that. Perhaps you should.
Perhaps I should. And Judy girl, love...
Do not Judy girl love me. I go to my rags and wood. Night, Master Copper.
And later, John went into the house, but he hardly slept a wink. Next day, he traveled down to Shropshire, where a lad pointed out Barbara Mercy's alehouse. He told her his trouble and asked her how to solve it. And Barbara Mercy said,
"Ah, snake."
And John was amazed and said, "What?" And Barbara Mercy, who was a patient woman, laid it out to him.
"Ah, snake."
"Poison my wife?"
"Ah, snake."
"Where can I get some?"
"Ah, snake."
"But where can I get some?"
"Why, right here."
It was noon when John got back to his house and opened the door wide to a domestic scene that would have warmed the cockles of a less disturbed man. Judith was churning, and his wife Hannah was crocheting a centerpiece to put on the silver tray after it had been ungreened and returned by the silversmith. Churning, crocheting, and sweet summer smells and sweet bliss.
Oh, Goody.
Oh, John.
Oh, wench.
Oh, Master Copper.
And what did you do in Shropshire Town, John?
Oh, to see a kegler. We'll be needing kegs come griping time.
Aye. Wench.
Yes, Goody Copper.
Have you got butter yet? Master Copper will want butter on his loaf for lunching.
Soon.
I thirst.
Well, there's milk in the larder there. Wench, fetch.
I'll fetch. And I'll bring you some, too.
Wench.
Yes, Goody.
It's a good husband I've got.
Yes, Goody.
My advice to you is to get a husband just as good. Ah, good provider and a thoughtful man. Oh, John, I just said you were a thoughtful man.
Tadio, drink your milk.
Thoughtful man.
But to drink. All of it for the coolness of it.
What is it, Goody? You just drained Goody. And your face whitened.
Help me.
You'll be poison Goody, and there's no help for you.
Help me. Help me.
I had to do it to you, Hannah. I tired of you, and I love me Judy girl.
Hello. And well now, oh. What do you do, Goody Cupper, on kitchen floor lying so?
Dying. What? Dying. They poisoned me.
Poisoned you say?
And you're dying?
Yes. Yes.
And I think you're dead, Goody Copper. John Copper?
Yes.
And what will you do with her fine things, her pretty zoo, her jewels? What will you do with them?
You know, that arsenic.
That'll do it.
That's what'll happen.
Yeah.
Give somebody arsenic, and they're gonna perish.
You're gonna end up dying on
exactly,
the floor.
Exactly, just as this woman did. That's Jeanette Nolan there speaking. She was a great actress. I've seen her in so many westerns during the original days of early TV. And I'll never forget Jeanette Nolan's performance on the very first radio show I ever listened to, which was Suspense on a Country Road. She played the Nellie Gawler, the escaped lunatic.
Oh, okay.
Jeanette Nolan on that. And this is a terrific episode. Lou Merrill as host. Also in the cast, Ben Wright, Irene Tedrow. Good cast. And it was produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. We'll get back to John and Judith, their crime, and why they didn't get to enjoy it. A tale of arsenic poisoning and old, jolly old England on Crime Classic. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. Thank you, Roger. Hey, Mike, did you see that the Cubs game tomorrow, Hurricanes, they canceled it. Did you see this?
Oh.
April Fool's Day after. gotcha. Can't wait to watch the Cubs opener at 7:30 tomorrow against St. Louis. Oh, man, I'm a big Cubs fan. You going to go to the Cubs, a couple of Cubs games this year?
I don't know, maybe.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Let's
you
go.
Know, a buddy of mine has some seats behind the plate,
oh, yeah?
And he sells them off sometimes.
Really?
So sometimes I pick them up from him.
Wow. If you got any of those, I'll pitch in.
Oh, maybe we'll go.
Yeah, I'll buy you a hot dog.
Fair enough.
You buy the tickets.
Can you afford that?
I'll buy you the hot dog. You know, I don't like hot dogs, but I will eat a hot dog at Wrigley Field. I don't normally eat hot dogs, but I will eat one at Wrigley Field. I don't know. You just feel like you're there. You got to have the whole experience.
Yeah, right,
you know what I'm
right.
saying? I do the hot dog. What else do I do when I'm there? I don't drink, so I don't drink alcohol. But I'm trying to think, what else will I do at a Cubs game that I wouldn't do elsewhere? Well, I don't know. Probably hot dog. That's about it. Yeah. And I like those. They used to have, I don't know if they have them anymore. They used to have those chocolate ice cream things. Like they're, you scoop them with a cardboard spoon. You know
right.
what I'm talking
yes,
about?
Yes, I do actually.
You know, what
yeah.
are those called?
I don't know.
Someone out there will know. 312-981-7200. It's like a sort of a malt, like malta something. You know what I'm saying?
Isn't
it's
it
like
just
a wooden,
ice cream?
No, it's not ice cream. It's sort of like a Malta something. And then it has a wooden, there's like a wooden spoon,
yeah,
flat.
Spoon.
It's not even a spoon where
right.
it's like a, it's actually a flat spoon. I used to get them as a kid, and they used to have them at the Cubs game. I don't know if they still do or not.
I don't know.
No, we'll have to go to a Cubs game
yeah,
and find
we'll
out.
Yeah, we'll find out.
I know our listeners will know. Let us know. Text us, 312-981-7200. All right, let's get back now to Crime Classics.
The question hung there for a few seconds, and then John didn't do a thing but turn around and run upstairs and gather together all his wife's pretios and jewels and gave them to Goody Smith. She tucked them under her arm and went singing, right out of the door. England in 1684. Charles II was on the throne, and when he wasn't on it, he was entertaining variously Nell Gwynn, Lucy Walter, the Duchess of Cleveland, and the Duchess of Portsmouth. It was a prosperous time in England. Spices and gold and tobacco and silver and precious jewels were pouring in from India, and the government was sending brightly colored and highly polished beads and discipline back in return. You'll remember that it was about this time when young Sir Broderick Danley put down an insurrection in Ceylon without a fatality, he and his men being armed only with bull whips.
The richness of empire was reflected everywhere on the British Isles. The rich got richer. And in the countryside, prosperity was evident, too. The lush field, the busy churneries, the heavily laden honeycombs. In the town of Snitton, in the parish of Bitterley, there was a house. And on the floor of this house was a corpse.
Well, it's done.
Oh, not quite done, John. I'm still a single woman.
Ah, after the burying, a month past that, and we'll wed.
Oh, and I will be good wife Judith Cupper.
Goody Cupper.
Oh, I like the sound of it. But don't you close to me till I'm called that, John Cupper. Called that by the neighbors and all the townspeople all about.
Judy.
Aye.
She's coming again. I can see her on the path through the window. Goody Smith.
Oh, she's a greedy woman, John.
Yes.
To be feared.
Hello!
What want you now?
A question to ask.
Which is?
Who's to do the burying of her? Who's to do the building of the coffin and the digging of the grave?
In Shropshire Town, there's a lad who...
In Snitton here, close to you, there's a lad too. Brother to me, a young lad starting up a trade. He'll build you a stout coffin and dig you a deep hole and cover it up again.
For how much will he do?
£20.
Which is four times what the lad from...
We'll do it.
Then I'll send him to you. Give me the £20, please.
Now, it must be said that although Goody Smith's brother Fenton was a willing lad, he was not too bright. Plus the fact that he had never done this sort of work before. Mostly, he had just roamed about and scared people. Well, he made the casket too small and of an inferior grade of lumber, cut with crude craftsmanship, so that an alarming accident took place at the interment. A carpenter had to be summoned from Shropshire to repair the damage. But the grave had been dug so deep and so narrow that he wouldn't get in it. And so Goody Cupper got buried in a faulty coffin. And a month later, there was a new Goody Cupper.
Oh, John, I'm so happy.
So am I, Judy girl.
Hello! Make heap of your wedding pewter. I'll take it home with me.
This was in August, and in September...
I broke my churner, Goody Cupper.
But how will I...
Have your husband bring it to me if that's what you wanted to ask. Always did like that churner you use.
And in October, the early part.
My brother's outside with cart, John Cupper. The constable says I must keep him indoors. That rocker you're rocking on's always been a favorite of his.
And in October, the later part.
It seems to me that soon you'll have nothing left.
Which is true, Barbara Mercy.
Well, last night she took dining table and all the chairs around it.
Listen. When Barnabas howls, 'tis a bitter cold that spills from the moors. A bitter winter's coming in.
Aye. When coming here, we saw the ice had formed on the River Teme where it touched the Corve.
I've answer for you.
Tell us.
Arsenic.
I thought you would give us counsel in such a way, Barbara Mercy.
Arsenic.
Aye, and here is money.
Arsenic.
You have said it, Barbara Mercy. There is no need to look thus. You have said it.
What?
Here is the money for the poison, Barbara Mercy.
Oh, Taddeo, I've got it right here in me apron. Here. Arsenic.
Ah, Taddeo.
Taddeo, Barbara Mercy.
It's cold, Judy girl, love, in a dismal time.
Oh, soon it'll be warm, John. Oh, soon.
Ah, but yet it grows colder by the minute.
Through the heather, light as a feather, and makes a gay song as she happens along. Singing gay, nonny-o, nonno, nonny-o day. Singing, sing with me, Goody Smith. Singing gay, nonny-o, nonny-o day, nonny.
Oh, he cuts a caper, your husband John does. The way he does! It's a dancer you are, John Cooper. Is that why you invited me to your house? To see you at caper?
To enjoy you, Goody Smith, to party with you, as neighborly does.
And you bear me no malice for my borrowing, do you?
Bears you malice? Now, why should I do that? Such a neighbor as you is a rare one indeed. My gullet's dry and it's a wet it needs. Let's drink our ale. And a mullet, Judy, with your poker.
Yes. This one is yours, Goody Smith. Drink you, and we'll all drink.
In truth?
In truth. Yeah, this one is yours.
What did you do?
Why did you spill the ale?
Goody Smith, why did you?
Oh, it's festive, I feel.
I'll fetch more ale.
And we'll spill it.
What aches you, Goody Smith?
There's not a thing that aches. Nor will there be. I have seen your first wife die, John Cooper, from a poison. And I want none of it for myself. No, you will not murder me. I will take the copper cups tonight. Fetch them. Fetch them now, for the festive is over and I'm going home.
And an hour after that, the Team River froze over. That's how cold it got. Any dogs that had howled outside had stopped howling. They'd frozen to death. John and Judith moved the mattress downstairs near the fireplace and huddled together under their last feather quilt. And John and Judith shivered, and their teeth chattered, and they stuck their heads under the blanket and fought a subtle little battle about who would get most of the warmth.
Get up and stir the fire, John.
Well, there's hardly what to stir. This morning she made me deliver all the firewood.
Oh, don't, you stupid.
What would you have me do? Would you...
Inside, Fenton, and quickly. And close the door. Hello. And well now, to sleep by the fire, I see.
Go away, Goody Smith. For the love of heaven, go away.
Oh, my brother Fenton is here. He tires of rocking. He wishes to lie down. And I have neither mattress nor feather quilt for him.
Oh, viper, you snake of the world. Oh, greatest foul.
Dear Goody Copper, how the cold has made you forget.
I have forgot nothing. Go, get out.
Oh, tell her, John, tell her.
Oh, get out. You get nothing more. Get out.
Very well. Come, Fenton.
Judy, girl. No, Judy, girl. Judy, girl. Come in quickly, whoever you be. And who may you be, sir?
I am King's Constable.
On what mission, sir?
To read a warrant.
On what charge, sir?
Murder.
Well, then read it and get on with it.
On the complaint of goodwife Sarah Smith of the town of Snitton in the parish of Bitterley, that John Cooper did hurriedly contrive with his maidservant Judith, now his wife, in poisoning his then-wife, Hannah, that these two shall be taken to the assizes in Shrewsbury and there tried. Come along.
They were too cold to protest. It was warm in jail, and there was a hot broth. Facts which suffused them with such a sense of well-being that they confessed everything.
Oh, I put the white arsenic in the milk and chucked her beneath the chin as she... and drank it down.
But it was my idea. I said to him, kill your wife, John.
And so I did, and I felt no remorse for it since I loved Judith.
And I loved John, which is why we needed to destroy Goody Copper.
Whoa, we murdered my wife. There's no doubt of it at all. Poisoned her.
Oh, I'm getting warm, John.
Oh,
She was burned at the stake and reduced to ashes. John was hung in chains, but on a warm spring day, and he seemed to be smiling. Goody Smith attended his execution, and for some reason or another, she claimed his body. In just a moment, Thomas Hyland will tell you about next week's crime classic. John and Judith, tonight's crime classic, was adapted from the original court reports and newspaper accounts by Morton Fine and David Friedkin. The music was composed by Bernard Herrmann and conducted by Lud Gluskin, and the program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Thomas Hyland is portrayed on radio by Lou Merrill. In tonight's story, Ben Wright was heard as John, Betty Harford as Judith, and Jeanette Nolan as Goody Smith. Featured in the cast were Irene Tedrow, Norma Varden, and Alec Harford. Bob Lamond speaking. Here again is Thomas Hyland.
Next week in this time, you will hear a special documentary show. And 2 weeks from tonight, I'll be back to tell you about the high seas in those years from 1736 to 1738. We will concern ourselves with two fun-loving fellows who wanted to steal a ship, a large one. It's listed in my files as Coyle and Richardson, Why They Hung in a Spanking Breeze. Thank you. Good night.
Stay tuned now for a special CBS radio broadcast, a history-making on-the-spot pickup of President Eisenhower's news conference in Washington, D.C. CBS radio newsman George Herrmann, White House correspondent, will introduce the news conference immediately following station identification on most of these same stations. Hear the first broadcast of a presidential news conference. Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, is heard Friday nights on the CBS radio network.
That is Crime Classics, a broadcast from December 16th, 1953, titled John and Judith, Their Crime and Why They Didn't Get to Enjoy It. And that starred Lou Merrill as Thomas Hyland on that, as heard on CBS. The announcer, Bob Lamond, at the end talked about Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, terrific detective show. We've aired a couple of them, but, you know, it was on for like 20-something years, and there's like four episodes that exist on that show, Mike. I'm not even kidding you. It's what a shame, because it was a really, really good program sponsored by Anison. Bennett Kilpack played the title role, and it was such a great detective series, and there's just only a handful of them.
Were they just lost over time?
Just lost, yeah. They didn't preserve them for some strange reason. It's something like that. It's like a tragedy to me, you know, right. When a show as good as that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But we'll continue to search for them if they're out there. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. I want to remind all of our listeners about our special meet and greet with the audience. It's called the WGN Radio Theater Ping Pong Meet and Greet at Spin Chicago. And Spin is located at 344 North State Street. It's a wonderful restaurant, lounge, and ping pong experience. It's unbelievable. It's a tremendous place. And I believe it's owned by Susan Sarandon, who is in that incredible series right now on television called Feud. She's playing Betty Davis, and she's amazing in that. I'm hoping that our listeners are watching that. Dave Plyer is here. Are you watching Feud, Dave? Hang on a second. Let's get your microphone on here. 1 second. There we go. Are you watching that on FX?
I am not. Oh. I know that's...
I would love that. Yeah. You would absolutely love it.
I DVR'd it, and I have not watched
it. Okay, you're going to love it. Yeah. You're going to love it. It's by the same producers that did the O.J. Simpson series that had John Travolta in it, okay. Cuba Gooding Jr. last year. Same producers. Okay. This thing is amazing.
Cool.
It is so good. And then Jessica Lang is playing...
Rabbit.
That's right. Jessica Rabbit. She's playing Joan... Davis.
Oh,
I mean,
cool. Crawford.
Joan Crawford. Sorry. Yeah. And then Betty Davis is Susan Sarandon. But did you know that Lisa and I and Mike and Shantae, we have a meet and greet at Spin on April 23rd.
Wow, look at
so
that.
I'd
That's
love
cool.
it if you'd come to it. It's on a Sunday.
Yeah, okay.
6 to 9, we can play some ping pong together.
Okay.
So it's a meet and greet for our 2-year anniversary.
Is it?
Okay, so I'll give it to you again.
Uh-huh.
April 23rd.
Okay,
it's a
good.
Sunday.
I'm done with my cleanse by then, so that means I can have a beer.
All right, there yeah. we go. And there's appetizers free for people.
All right, okay.
You know, you tell people you got appetizers.
Yeah, pizza
get
rolls,
some,
ham with cream
some
cheese rolled
yeah.
up. Is that what you're doing?
I'm thinking a little, and with the toothpick.
With the pickle.
And the little pickle, yeah. And then and we're going to play ping pong. They've
okay.
reserved some ping pong
That's
tables
cool.
for us.
Nice.
It's a whole meet and greet with our listeners
like
because
that.
We've been on 2 years.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, congratulations.
So that's. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
6 to 9 p.m., and then we'll come over here and do the show.
I love that.
Yeah.
You need to try to
bring everybody with you.
Add a frosty malt.
That's
for
right.
Dessert.
We were trying to remember what it was called, and I don't know if they still have it at the Cubs games. You would know this.
Yeah, they do have the wooden spoon. I did hear you.
They have the wooden spoon.
They
it's
do
called,
have that.
It's called a frosty malt.
Yeah, they have them.
Yeah. They've yeah. gotten smaller over the years. I remember when I was
yeah.
a kid, they were about this big,
mm-hmm.
right? They were like 10
yep.
inches.
Yep.
Now they're like 2.5, 3
Something
inches.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so
yeah.
you pay more and you get less.
That's exactly
that's the way it works.
Welcome to America.
As we get older.
That's exactly
that's
right.
right. So Dave has a tremendous Cub player on
yeah.
with him tonight.
Yeah, I got David Ross
David
tonight.
Ross.
Yeah, very
wow.
excited about that. We're going to kick it off, actually, with Andy Mazur from WGN Sports talking about tonight's
Great.
Game because that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And then David Ross.
Wow.
Not only talking about Dancing with the Stars, which he, as well as others, I think are surprised he's made it to the third episode already. You know, there's a couple people that have been kicked off already. And so we're going to talk to him. And then Carl Reiner returns to the show.
Wow.
Which is pretty cool because he's got another book out. He just turned 95. And
God love him.
No, and what I really love is I didn't know about the book, and I usually try to stay on top of some of that stuff. And his assistant called me, and he said he wants to come talk
That's
about
so
the
great.
About the book. So got him. It's
is
also,
it out now or coming out?
It's out. It's
okay,
out now.
Great.
And then I think it's 78 years ago Batman premiered. So I'm going to share my conversation with Adam West.
Wow.
If you can believe that. You know, the comics, the actual comics.
Oh, okay, because I was going to say, because it was 66 when the series
yeah,
came
it was
out.
50.
But so the original Bob
comics.
Kane
yes.
comic strip.
Detective
that was,
Comics.
I'm trying to think.
Number 27.
I think that was a Marvel, right? It was probably.
No, DC.
Oh, it was DC. Yeah, you're right. No, it was absolutely right. Yeah, DC
yeah.
Comics. And back then, yeah, they were. I remember seeing a reprint, not
yeah.
the original,
yeah.
of course, a reprint of it.
Of the original Dark Knight.
Bob Kane.
Yeah, Bob Kane.
Wow, very
That's
cool.
That's right, yeah.
So you're
going
to talk to Adam West.
Adam West. So big show. Big crazy
big,
show today. Do
big
not,
show.
Do not, if you're watching on WGNRadio.com, we've got new lighting in here.
Yeah.
Everyone goes LED.
Uh-huh.
LED is not what it's cut out to be. This whole changed the whole mood of the studio.
Right, it's very bright in here
oh,
now.
Oh, gosh.
Very...
looks like a hospital.
We need sunglasses.
Well, it's the wrong, like, there's not enough people that know enough about LED, and there's soft lighting now, there's a cool, and there's a daylight, and this is cool, and it's just really tough.
Why didn't they ask Lou?
I'm
seriously.
Yeah, I don't know if they did.
There's really no dimmers or anything on it. This is it. I mean, they're as low as they can go right now.
No way.
Yeah, that's it. Look over there.
Oh, you're supposed to buy dimmable LEDs.
So there you go.
No, just a little side behind-the-scenes conversation.
First
here.
World issues.
Yeah, I guess so.
I'll bring us all some Ray-Bans next week,
that.
Okay?
That sounds good.
So we'll all
I
look really cool
that.
In
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
I want to thank Shantae Garth. She's amazing. She makes us sound so good. And I want to thank Mike Estella, who pinch hit for Lisa Wolf tonight. And thanks to all of our listeners.